For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Catherine Drew. Former US President Barack Obama has endorsed French presidential candidate Emmanuel Macron ahead of Sunday's second round in the country's election. It's a highly unusual move, but the former president says it reflects the high stakes in the weekend battle between the centrist Mr. Macron and the far-right leader Marine Le Pen. From Washington, FSN's Simon Marks has more.
The American people have heard very little from Barack Obama since he left office, but now on video he's telling French voters to back Emmanuel Macron, saying he admires the campaign the centrist has run.
Because of how important this election is, I also want you to know that I am supporting Emmanuel Macron to lead you forward. Vive la France.
Mr. Obama knows that current President Donald Trump is a big admirer of Marine Le Pen, the far-right candidate who echoes many of the US leader's populist policies. Barack Obama wants to help stop her in her tracks.
Somalia's youngest government minister has been shot dead by government troops after being mistaken for a militant Islamist. 31-year-old Abdullahi Sheikh Abbas was shot after his car appeared to be blocking a road near the presidential palace in the capital, Mogadishu. President Abdullahi Mohamed Farmajo has cut short a trip to Ethiopia to return home, saying Mr. Abbas will be given a state funeral. Somalia has suffered conflict for decades and is currently battling militant Islamists affiliated with the Al-Qaeda terror group. In the UK, the Queen's husband, Prince Philip, is stepping down from public life at the age of 95. The announcement came after the royal household gathered at Buckingham Palace to be told the news. FSN's Ollie Barrett is there.
Buckingham Palace confirming that this is a decision which has been taken by Prince Philip himself, but which has the full support of the Queen. Prince Philip will carry out engagements that are already booked in until August, and after that point he will step down from public engagements. He is 95 years old, of course, soon to be 96, and has worked harder in his 90s than most people do, but certainly Prince Philip feeling that it is time to step aside from some of those duties and allow perhaps more of them to be carried out by some of the younger royals.
The European Commission has dismissed British Prime Minister Theresa May's claims that Brussels was seeking to interfere in the upcoming general election as electioneering. May delivered an unexpected attack on unnamed EU figures Wednesday. FSN's Europe correspondent Elena Cassis reports from Brussels.
The European Commission spokesman Margarita Skynas said the Commission and other member states were taking little heed of Theresa May's allegations, saying all sorts of claims are made during an election campaign. EU negotiators have made it clear they are ready to get down to talks as soon as the election is over, and they'd welcome the increased majority that would give May more space to negotiate.
From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Catherine Drew, and a warm welcome to the programme to you, and may the 4th be with you. Bit Daffy Duck-esque there. May the 4th be with you. If you're a Star Wars fan, you're having a good day. Hope you're having a good day wherever you are. You can tweet me between now and 9 p.m. on @RichieAllenShow. Tweet me, tell me what you're thinking about anything. You can email richie@richieallen.co.uk. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and alternate current radio. Let's crack on then.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show. Brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And it's a beautiful spring evening in the great city. The sun is shining. It's gorgeous. A bit windy, but it's gorgeous here. Coming up in the program later on, the great Paul Craig Roberts joins us live from Virginia. Don't need to tell you too much about Paul. Former Assistant Treasury Secretary. Going to talk about North Korea. Going to talk about Syria. You might know this, you might not, but quietly today, quietly the pressure has been ramped up on the Syrian government of Bashar al-Assad. The BBC are reporting that a Western intelligence agency has produced documents proving that the Assad government has continued to manufacture chemical weapons. Where is this all going to end? Paul Craig Roberts in the second hour. And before that, in light of the nonsense, the crap being talked about the royal consort, Prince Philip, Philip the Greek, on BBC, Sky, Channel 4, ITV. It's everywhere today. You heard on the news there. 96-year-old Prince Philip will not be carrying out any more royal engagements after the autumn. That has led to eulogies, the likes of which we've never heard before, about the man and his greatness. So I thought we'd invite onto the programme somebody who spoke to me in the first week of the Richie Allen Show, a man called Alan Power, a good friend of mine. First met Alan at TPV Television in London. He wrote a book called The Princess Diana Conspiracy, terrific read, where he linked the royal family, the House of Windsor, to the assassination of Princess Diana. He's had a pretty difficult time of it since then. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about Philip and who he really is, the Prince Philip not presented to you by the media. Alan Power joins me this hour. It'll be a great welcome back to him. Last time, as I said, he was on was in September 2014. Alrighty. We are live on davidicke.com. Check out davidicke.com/headlines. That is the place to find the information not being disseminated on mainstream media. Check out David's website. We're on Alternate Current Radio 2, packed with great programmes. Fab Radio 2 as well as TuneIn Radio. Local elections today across the United Kingdom. Local elections, local councils, and some mayoral elections as well. No, I didn't vote, of course not. My polling card arrived a few weeks ago, but I did not go and vote today. Of course, I didn't. I've been asked several times by some of our UK-based listeners. I didn't. So the media imposed a moratorium on itself. No politics until 10 p.m. UK time tonight, because people are out voting, presumably. They don't want to unduly influence anybody. So here's a couple of stories that are of interest to us. Big story, of course, breaking this afternoon. The Turks, the Iranians and the Russians have come to an arrangement. Well, at least they're proposing an arrangement for safe zones in Syria. We'll get into that in the second hour with Paul Craig Roberts. Might talk about it briefly this hour. We might not have time. But I've not seen that. I have seen that. In case you think, oh, it's pretty big news there and he's not talking about it. Have seen that. But in the meantime, here's a couple of stories that are of interest to us. The Daily Mail report today that children must be taught in school what to do in a terror attack, as they used to learn to be wary of strangers. So as we used to teach children to be wary of strangers, we now need to teach them about terrorism, says Lucy Dorsey. She's the Deputy Assistant Commissioner at Scotland Yard. And she said a government campaign telling the public how to keep safe if they are caught up in a terror outrage must be drummed home to pupils. Drummed home. It must be drilled into them. She said the advice to run, hide and tell in a massacre like the ones we've seen in Paris was as vital as warning them about everyday safety issues. Any rampage on a packed building, said Lucy Dorsey, the Deputy Assistant Commissioner, such as a shopping centre or public space, was likely to affect a large number of young people. Now, she's also the National Police Chief's Council Spokesman for Protective Security, and she was speaking at the World Counter-Terror Congress in London. She said, when I was at school, everybody talked about stranger danger. That was the buzz phrase. It's still a thing I remember today. Run, hide and tell. For me, that messaging needs to be to children as well as to the broader public. They need to share this message in the same way I had stranger danger. And I was reading this today, and the thing that came into my mind as I was reading it was trauma-based mind control, which I'd have known nothing about, of course, if it wasn't for the many great women, David, and others who've come on programmes like this to tell me about it. As a parent, if you are a parent, do you want your children subjected to this sort of thing? Terror drills. Again, I was trying to calculate the odds today. What are the odds of your child being involved in a terror situation or a terror outrage at their school? The odds must be astronomical. Now, I did a little bit of digging today. Not, I didn't have to dig very hard to find out that they've been doing this in France. Now, you probably knew this anyway. They've been trying it in France, and they've been teaching children as young as three. As young as three. The result? Well, it's not gone very well. One angry parent told Le Figaro, which is a French daily newspaper, they made children as young as three draw terrorists, presumably in copybooks, and told them to lie on the floor and play dead. One teacher told the children that a big bad wolf had entered the school premises and told them to hide and remain silent. Another mother said, my children refuse to play outside because they think they're about to be attacked. I now spend my time telling them that they won't be attacked. Another parent said during the mock attack, her son told his teacher there were no terrorists in town and the drill was useless, to which the teacher replied, you'll thank me for this when the terrorists do come. Another mother told Le Figaro her son had trouble falling asleep after the anti-terror exercise because he was convinced a terrorist was trying to break into the house. There you are. That's what the result has been in France. Children hiding under their beds. Some children developing agoraphobia. Children scared of their own shadows. Let's introduce that in primary schools. Let's tell our children the terror is imminent. Terrify them. Teach them to obey, to acquiesce. Manipulate their minds through fear. Jesus wept, 11 and a half minutes past the hour. Now, before Alan Power joins me in a couple of minutes' time, Prince Philip retired. This was greeted with great relief on the 24-hour news channels today. Why? Because they couldn't talk about the election. So they spent hours trying to outdo one another in praising the amazing contribution Prince Philip has made to British life. Sycophants were wheeled out from everywhere. He's great. He supports the Queen. He's really very funny, you know. Even Jeremy Corbyn paid tribute. What a wonderful man Prince Philip is. Giles Brandreth, his friend, the dodgy sweater-wearing countdown guest. Countdown is a Channel 4 quiz show involving numbers and letters, if our American listeners don't know what it is. So he's a great guy. He sacrificed himself for the greater good for 50 years. 70 years, in fact, they're saying. But there's a lot they're not telling you about Prince Philip today. No mention of the fact that Egyptian billionaire Harrods mogul Mohammed Al-Fayed believed that Philip was behind the death of his son Dodi, who had a relationship with Diana, Princess of Wales. Now here's Mohammed Al-Fayed speaking with Keith Allen in the excellent documentary Unlawful Killing. I play you this in advance of speaking with Alan Power shortly. Al-Fayed accusing Prince Philip of being complicit in the murder of his son and his son's lover.
It's, the relation is there, you know. I was welcomed. I was sponsoring the Royal Horse Show for the last 15 years before the tragedy at a cost of £20 million. I sit next to the Queen. Prince Philip come here to have lunch, you know. Prince Charles, they let her come to spend the holiday with the princess, you know. And everything was okay. Only when they saw that my son, you know, going out with Diana and Diana fall in love with him. This is just natural, you know.
Like horse breeding, royal lineage is all about bloodlines. They'd regarded Diana as nothing more than a brood mare crossed with a clothes horse, but she turned out to be a kicker, getting her oats by being covered by an Arab stallion. And Mohammed thinks that was sufficient motive for the royals to decide it was time to send them all to the knacker's yard.
They have murdered my son and Princess Diana. And I put my finger straight to the gangster who ruling the country behind the scene, who is the head of the royal household, Prince Philip. Right. You think that he stopped
you? He is the person have initiated and also in participation with Prince Charles.
Amazing that Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, neglected to sue the obviously devastated Mohammed Al-Fayed, considering he's a billionaire. Well, Richie, the royals couldn't be doing that, and you couldn't get a royal family member into court. Nonsense. Nonsense. Never understand why he never sued Mohammed Al-Fayed. But anyway, his sisters, Philip's sisters, married Nazis. One of them an SS officer. He attended the funeral of a Nazi. He was a Nazi sympathiser, and he went to boarding school in Germany. Again, these are things not mentioned in his biography today. He was practically raised by his uncle. Not by his uncle. Excuse me. He was practically raised by Louis Mountbatten. Of course, Louis Mountbatten is the uncle of his son Charles. Of course, his brother. Practically raised by Louis Mountbatten, notorious paedophile known as Dickie. You might remember the IRA blew him up off the coast of Kerry, if memory serves me. He was known as Dickie. He was a paedophile. He took boys and abused boys at Kincora Boys Home in Belfast. And he lived with him. It was Louis Mountbatten who fixed him up with the Queen. When Philip was 20, when he was in the Navy, he was being fixed up with the Queen. She was 13. He began writing love letters to her when she was 13 years old. Think about that. Think about why this guy was slipped in to the royal family. They didn't mention today Kamloops Residential Catholic School, the disappearance of children there in 1964. 10 native children taken on a picnic by Prince Philip and the Queen and others were never seen again. That's absolutely true, by the way. I'm not saying that I can prove or anybody can prove their disappearance had anything to do with the Queen or Prince Philip. Can't say that, but they were the last people to see those children. Those children did disappear in British Columbia. It did happen. The surviving family members of some of those children still talk about it today. Prince Philip, like his son Charles, a fan and close friend of Jimmy Savile. Prince Philip, whose son Andrew is a friend and confidant of paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. None of this made the news today. You won't be surprised. None of this made his official biography. He once said, if I were reincarnated, I'd like to come back as a killer virus to lower population levels. Nice guy. Nice guy. He also told a medical student in Germany that he avoids doctors like the plague and expressed astonishment when the young doctor said that he really did intend to treat people. Think about that one again. You know, I was reading that today and I knew about that anyway. And I thought, he knows, doesn't he? You know, he knows. That's why some of these creeps live as long as they do. They live forever, don't they? Prince Philip. We're going to talk more about him with Alan Power in a couple of minutes' time. This is the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio, and my own website, richieallen.co.uk. Very quick break, back in a minute with plenty more. Keep it right here.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2. Available now at premiumonpictures.co.uk.
Right, it's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the programme. Just to let you know, there will be a news programme tomorrow, Friday, to make up for my absence on Tuesday. I think it might be in the early afternoon. I was planning to broadcast it live at 5, but it might be a little bit earlier. It will be live anyhow, whatever time I do it. I'll put that on social media in the morning. Sunday View is normal on Sunday. I've got some terrific guests lined up for the programme for next week. I will remember to tell you about those guests a little bit later on before the end of this programme. Remember, Paul Craig Roberts joins me in the second hour. But coming up in a couple of minutes is Alan Power. Alan Power is a fascinating guy. The author even of the Diana Conspiracy. He joins me. We're going to talk more about Prince Philip. The Princess Diana Conspiracy is the book. Back with Alan Power after the Clash on the Richie Allen Show. From the Clash, Rock at the Casbah on the Richie Allen Show, 23 minutes past the hour. Well, let's welcome our first guest to the programme then. It's been quite a while since he was on last on this programme back in September of 2014. Met him in London the year before. He's a journalist and author, and his book, The Princess Diana Conspiracy, is a terrific book, incredibly thought-provoking, very well-researched, and written. Now, in the book, he claimed that the order to assassinate Princess Diana came from the royal family, and he neatly linked the murder to agents of the intelligence services here in the UK and the royal consort Prince Philip. That's the Princess Diana Conspiracy. Now, from the get-go, from the time the book was published, he underwent and suffered, it must be said, a campaign of harassment that continues to this day. And we're going to talk about that as well. Delighted to welcome to the programme, live from the Isle of Man, welcome back, Alan Power. Alan, welcome back. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Richie. How are you doing?
I'm really well, Alan. Thanks for responding so quickly today to the call. It's not been a marvellous time for you. Before we talk about Prince Philip and the book, the harassment that you began to endure upon publishing the book back in 2012-2013, which was extensive and was documented by tabloid newspapers in this country, it hasn't gone away, mate. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a long story. Started really, the heavy stuff started in August 13. The book was published, it was due to be published in the previous year, in 12, but the publisher that had signed a contract for it, John Blake Publishing in London, was told to back off by a party or parties and constantly welched on it. So they're doing another year to organise the whole process and get somebody else to run with it. They're all terrified of the truth coming out. And so basically I finally got it going. Had it published on September 13, end of August, beginning of September. And 2 weeks before the book was published, I was flying from the Isle of Man to England and England back to the Isle of Man with various some of the business I was on over there. And on the way back, I had a man sitting next to me on the seat. He was on the aircraft before I even got on the aircraft. So he knew exactly who I was, where I was sitting. He had the absolute details of where I was going to be. Sat down in the seat, and when I got on, a very nice guy, actually, a really nice fellow, I liked him. And he came clean straight away and told me he better introduce himself. His name is Patrick Condon. He was MI6 GCHQ computer section, and that he was obviously been working on my book. He'd already read it in substantial detail, a bit more than read it, I believe. And he told me they were going to have a problem with my book, and that, as I say, is 2 weeks before it was published, so proving. But at that time, and let's don't forget, it's before the law permitted, and certainly in the last few months has been allowed, to interrogate that such documentation, such detail, and private correspondence. He was breaking the law in doing it. He admitted so by telling me that. And he told me they have a problem. He was, as I say, a very nice guy, and basically we were chatting away about this, and I told him, should stop going around murdering princesses, and all he did was drop his head on his chest. He didn't say, not a beep, not about, nothing, you know, about Demi Four, of course.
No denial, nothing. No denial whatsoever.
No denial at all, no.
Well, I mean, that must have been an incredible time for you, you know, to have an MI6, was he MI5 Condon, MI5 or MI6, MI5, wasn't he?
Six.
MI6, to have the guy turn up on the plane, sit down with you, tell you that he's read the book. You said that he came across as very jovial, but at the same time, there's a little unsubtle threatening going on there, right? I mean, there is.
Well, he's doing his job, basically, and he obviously sees what he's doing. The state sees what they're doing. He's trying to protect the monarchy and stop this disruption of what's taking place. And the consequences are, I've discovered, let's face it, what they've done is they've, apart from murdering Diana, they've abused British democracy right down the line. They have taken away our civil liberties. They've perverted the course of justice. They've committed effectively, one might argue, high treason against the people of the country. But what they've done is just beyond the pale. And to have that revealed would be devastating. And as Lord Stevens was reputed to say, and it was shown in court, he almost he did say he was denying it, but they couldn't believe it. It didn't show that he had denied it. That he was being honest about that. He said that if this indeed be a murder, the consequences would be great and incalculable in the country. And I believe that's true. And I think once they'd done this, they had no choice other than to stay with it. You can't then suddenly say that's what's happened and then reverse the process. You think of the consequences of reversal, it's just devastating.
Tell me this, Alan, and some of these questions now you've heard from me before, but a lot has changed since we spoke last. We've a much wider audience. They won't have heard me speaking with you before. You, when you set out to write the book, you had an open mind, and you weren't determined to link Prince Philip and the intelligence agencies to her death. You were looking into it as an investigative reporter, as a journalist. I want you to clarify that you didn't have any preconceived idea. You didn't have, no.
No. No, I didn't. I mean, I went through the whole process thinking that let's examine this to see what actually happened. I certainly have to confess I did feel this wasn't quite right, yes, and that's probably in conjunction with 90%+ of the population of the country, I believe. I mean, and when this sort of thing happens, you know, things are bound, something's bound to go wrong. As many people say, how could you murder someone in such a way and get away with it? And there's a point there, because it was a complex way of doing it, but it has to look like an accident. And the evidence, I think, on that is fairly clear from the inquest, where it's proven that MI6 had this idea, they admitted this idea within MI6. There was witness A at the inquest was the one who actually came up with the idea. It's a sidekick of Richard Tomlinson, who was in MI6 at that time. And they had planned to murder Slobodan Milosevic in exactly the same way. Now, what MI6 did was they didn't dismiss the whole idea and say, oh, no, that was a silly idea. They archived the idea. Now, when you archive something, you give it a tag, attach a tag to it. You don't do that if it's a foolish idea. That's just not going to work. You do it because you're thinking, well, maybe this might be an idea sometime in the future. This was a few years before Diana was murdered. So in 1995. So basically, 1994, 1995. There's evidence there straight away that this was definitely something they were thinking about. They had archived for future potential use, and therefore it wasn't something that was considered hit and miss by them or by the team that they used for the murder.
Let me just, Alan, that's really important. Let me just clarify that. For people who haven't heard this before, just to clarify what Alan is saying, and Alan has explained it perfectly, but I want to reiterate this. Richard Tomlinson, who was a former MI6 officer, he came forward to say that back in the early 90s, the plan to kill somebody in the very same way Diana was killed, basically getting somebody into a tunnel, they planned to kill Slobodan Milosevic in the Geneva tunnel by blinding his chauffeur using a strobe light. And this was central to your early investigation, wasn't it, Alan? That they had this archived, as you said. This was an assassination method, no doubt about it.
Yes. Yep.
Hugely important.
There was one. Well, they actually discussed it at the inquest. That was one of the assassination methods. The other one was to use served dissidents to do it. The other one was to use military means, direct, which of course they did, was indirect with the increment team, or direct military intervention. I sort of just shoot the open fire and have it known that it was an assassination. Some cases less sensitive, as in Slobodan Milosevic, because people might have expected someone to bump him off. But with Diana, the whole thing was beyond the pale. It was just a different situation entirely. They knew what the people of the country would feel when they knew, if they couldn't keep it quiet after the event, what they'd done to her. It was just way beyond the pale. It was just not acceptable.
Alan, I want you to educate our listeners, because a lot of our listeners listen through... We broadcast on several platforms. One of them is a mainstream commercial online station, Fab Radio, here in Manchester. And a lot of our listeners come through that platform. They see the royal family as ceremonial. They see them as, you know, a figurehead, as a cash cow for the tourism business in this country. They don't see anything else. That's what they see. Explain to them who Prince Philip really is in terms of his connection to the intelligence services. Convince them that this guy would have the clout to be involved in something as major as an assassination like that.
Right. The position with MI6 is their job is to protect the royal family. That's their primary role. To protect the state, and obviously the head of state comes at the top of the list for protection. Now, whatever that protection may be, it depends. And some might say, well, obviously, in the case of Diana, it's very, very questionable that it was necessary to do what they did. But the idea came through within their file that they had no option, that was the only way of making sure that they would protect the monarchy, either Diana's dossier showing all the evidence about what's been going on in the royal family, the fact that she was marrying somebody who was going to have the power to enable her to say and to be and to do whatever she wanted to do and go where she wanted to go, to take the children with her abroad, which, you know, would be unacceptable and was unacceptable. Queen, she said that she actually denounced the idea publicly after being stated by Diana that she might be looking to go abroad to live. So it was very clear that they were controlling it, they needed to control it, and it was not acceptable that she should be, or Diana should be able to go away with her children. And the courts would almost certainly find for the mother. It would be very hard for courts to do otherwise within the public view. As far as the association is concerned, well, since MI6 are there primarily for the protection of the royal family, it's all like a private police force, effectively. And don't forget, it wasn't even known if it existed until 1994, just a few years before Diana was murdered. No one knew it was denied. They lied about it, left, right, and center. It did not exist. Of course, it did. But basically, as far as the activity is concerned inside the family, all we know of the facts, just some of the stuff we know, is that the royal family had a kind of group called the Way Ahead Group, which is something they devised themselves for the family to consider the way ahead, how they should go forward as a royal family. And very frequent visitors to those sessions were members of MI6, quite common. And MI6 to go along to the palace outside of those meetings, and Phillips even attended Vauxhall Cross. So I mean, the whole thing is really like a private... And it can't be seen to be so, because the Queen is titular, a titular head of state. Now, if it's shown that somebody has the power to do this outside of the knowledge of the Prime Minister, it means someone who has the power to influence that decision clearly has greater power than the Prime Minister.
Now, this is really important, my friend. This is hugely important. Let me do a quick recap. 24 minutes at the top of the hour. We're getting to the gist of it. Alan Power, old friend of mine, journalist and author, is on the line from the Isle of Man. His book, The Princess Diana Conspiracy, is a terrific read. It really is. I used to know Noel Botham very well, the author of The Death of a Princess. Alan knew him well as well. Noel passed away a few years ago. I used to speak with Noel about these issues. We're getting to the crux of it now, because what the public don't understand in this country, Alan, and I think you and I agree, although we might disagree in certain areas, is that these people are far from harmless, benevolent, as you said, titular or ceremonial heads of state. They are not. To a certain degree, or more than a certain degree, these people are still very much in charge, right?
Absolutely.
100%. Even yesterday, the Prime Minister had to go to Buckingham Palace to ask permission to dissolve Parliament. And people think that's just ceremonial, it's just traditional. It isn't. These people are in charge. Go ahead.
The position is really that the monarch and whoever, basically the whole family, really, and certainly the key members within the family, decide how they're going to structure things, get out of issues or problems they have. You know, the Queen didn't come back to London when Diana was murdered initially, partly because she was trying to understand how she was going to resolve this within her own mind. I actually, perfectly honest with you, Richie, and you may not believe this, or you may not agree with this, I don't believe the Queen knew what was going down with Diana. I think she found out that evening. I've got a little bit of evidence on this. I can't say it's just to do with another witness I have, and I'm hoping to bring on board very soon.
Which is huge,
defense, obviously.
Which is huge, by the way. And can I just jump in there? Why would I not agree with you? Listen, I've been speaking in the monologue before you came on, talking about facts, not about conspiracy theory or conjecture, talking about facts.
Yeah.
The Queen was groomed by Louis Mountbatten and by this guy, this Philip the Greek. She was groomed. This guy was writing letters to her when she was 13 years of age. This guy was always meant... That, you can laugh if you want, Alan. It's an absolute fact. She was groomed by this guy.
It's almost a joke. Yes, I know, you're absolutely right.
I am right. I mean, if you had a 13-year-old daughter today and some guy in the Navy was 20 years of age was writing love letters to him, you'd break his fucking legs. Right?
Yeah, absolutely right. Quite right.
And not to mention that Louis Mountbatten, we know now for a fact, again, it's not conspiracy theory, was taking boys and abusing boys at Kinkora Boys Home in Belfast. And he basically raised this guy, Philip. All of this is relevant. No, I wasn't saying it for a laugh when I said groomed. But to a certain point, when you look at it historically, he's definitely calling the shots there. He is. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. No, because of the whole thing is that, as far as the Queen's concerned, I think she was, as you say, led along. She's there because she is the head of state, but she's not really in the driving seat. I think she's basically being controlled and led by Philip and others around the scene. But basically, it's Philip driving the... Sorry, it's the Queen driving the shots. I think that... that night, I believe that, as I say, I have some evidence, and I hope to be able to show this very soon, that the Queen didn't know about the murder until the evening.
But
I have
when...
some evidence that she left the matrimonial bedchamber, that evening, and didn't go back for quite some time.
But presumably, when she learned of the death of Diana, she must have known. I mean, when she heard about it, she must have known, well, you know, he was behind it. What we're saying here, most people... in, you know, who don't listen to independent media sources, who don't pay attention, will think, I mean, this is absolutely crazy. What the guys are saying there is that this guy is basically calling the shots politically in the UK in 2017. But there's an abundance of evidence that he is. I mean, again, people don't know anything about the City of London, what that is, what it means. And again, you go back to his... you know, his Nazi roots, his upbringing in Germany, his relationship with other royal families, with banking families. There's a lot more to this guy than most people understand. When do you think, I suppose we can't pin it down in terms of timing, but you reckon, Alan, the minute it was learned that she was pregnant with Dodi Al-Fayed's child, at that point, Prince Philip decided, well, that's it then, she has to go. And presumably, he initiated discussions with MI6. Is that how it went?
My evidence suggests that it was being planned for quite some time as a backstop. They wanted to know there was no option, so one could argue they were trying to not perform it, but it was there in case they needed to. The triggers were the pregnancy, and that's best known for the facts. I've personally spoken with Dr. Elizabeth Dion, the French radiologist, who said she'd seen a fetus in Diana's womb, maybe up to 10 weeks old. It might have been a bit less, 6 to 10 weeks, she said, and she said it could have been as much as 10. And she was going on about, she was trying not to answer the questions, but she did slip when I was asking her about the affidavit, a three-line affidavit, which didn't mention pregnancy, didn't mention where she was that night at all. Skip and Sage was working in San Francisco. When I asked her, I said, well, how do you know, why did someone say, one of your friends say that they'd seen the fetus, either you had said you'd see the fetus in Diana's room? I said, there must have been a problem with the rotors that night. I said, well, rotors? Well, how could you be on a French rotor if you're working in the United States? I thought, oh boy, silence, not a word. It was obvious the whole thing was another con. And the guy who led that up was a guy called Sergeant Philip Easton, Scotland Yard, who was tasked with performing that little trick, and also sussing out or scoping the evidence about Soldier N, SAS Soldier N, who stated quite clearly that SAS murdered Diana, which they did, and it was done by a team called the Increment Team. Now I've changed its name to East Squadron, by the way, because the name has become far too well known. And I've probably changed it from East Squadron now, so I'll do that. Basically, the whole thing is a nasty little setup, and it's a nasty little system running throughout our whole country.
And the pregnancy,
ages.
And the pregnancy was the final straw. As you said, they had planned this previously because Diana was dangerous. Oh. Let me ask you this, Alan. By the way, folks, just a reminder, Alan Power is on the line from the Isle of Man, the author of The Princess Diana Conspiracy. First met Alan in 2013 in London. Read the book a couple of times. Fascinating read. We'll talk more about the book and getting it and issues getting it with Alan shortly. Alan, for me, you know, again, I can't prove any of this. This is just a bit of amateur detective work. But we know that Diana made several statements. And these are statements that she definitely made, expressing her fear of this guy particularly and her fear that she was going to be murdered. Now, what that tells me is that Diana, who seemed to be an intelligent woman, must have begun to realise, because she was part of the inner circle, she began to see the truth about who these people were or are, what they really represent. And I think that that must play a part in this. What do you think?
Absolutely right. That's the essence of it, largely. Well, I mean, it's a mix. That's what she was feeling. She was living amongst this mix. It disgusted her. She hated it. She hated being there. She hated, of course, the fact the way Charles had been handling the situation and treated her. The whole royal family had treated her. It's been quite appalling. And she was used as a breeding mare, brood mare. She was just basically, for breeding purposes. And she was quite disgusted and obviously naturally horrified and infuriated by it. So when she had a chance of having justice or procuring justice, she didn't miss the trick on it. She was going for it. And she would have left the country, and she would certainly, she already had a child by Dodi on the way. The whole lot was already unfolding. They already had a house they were looking at in California. It was Julie Andrews' house that they were thinking of buying. They hadn't confirmed at that time, but they were thinking about it. They were definitely very seriously looking to go abroad to live. And the Queen had said no to that. So that was going to be a major issue. Plus the pregnancy, plus Diana's dossier and her attitude towards the monarchy, which was it was going to be absolutely devastating. Because you can't blame her for what injustice, what they'd done to her. So that was all happening. There's no question about it, honestly, really, there isn't. And I think, obviously,
Do you know what, Alan? Again, now, I don't expect you to comment on this at all. I'm not going to be irresponsible, but I'm going to tell it as it is. Who knows what else she saw? I came up in commercial radio. I'm a real journalist, qualified with years of courses taken and passed in libel law. So I'm not a fool. But we know that this family has been surrounded by paedophiles for years. Anthony Blunt, Jimmy Savile, Jeffrey Epstein today. Who knows what she knew about, what she came to understand. And I'm not suggesting for a minute that the Queen or anybody else is a paedophile. I'm not. But they kept very close relationships with notorious paedophiles. Who knows what Diana knew, Alan?
Absolutely right. And, of course, we know the story about Charles and some of his servants. Diana said he had a very unhealthy relationship with some of his male servants. There was a lot of stuff there. I put some of it in my book, actually, but I didn't put too much.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but the whole thing is a disgrace. What I try to do is focus on what I know to be facts, all the way down the facts. And the facts have been, I think the facts there that I have in the book are sufficient to make the point quite clearly. What we're saying here and what we're discussing about here is the truth. That's why, as I think I told you earlier on today, they've blocked, they've destroyed my books in the States. They're at Amazon.com over there, some 800 books. I had a message back about 5-6 months ago, and I was saying my destruction order has been completed.
Destruction order?
My destruction order, yes. They just destroyed all of my books. I've been fighting for over a year to try and get them to clear the lines so I could sell them properly. They were blocking left, right, and centre.
But Alan, that's a criminal. That's a criminal act. That is criminal damage. That is there anything you can do about that?
Well, it's going to cost an awful lot of cash. Of course, what they're doing to me is trying to destroy me financially as well. And they're having a fairly good impact. So I'm in some serious pressure, should we say. Then they had a go at the books in the UK. The books, I put 480 books, precisely, that number, in Amazon.com, .co.uk. And they're all places in Dunfermline, at their distribution centre. And there are 480 books there today, over 3.5 years later. Not one has been allowed to be sold.
Is that right? So if somebody goes on to Amazon.co.uk now and tries to buy the book, because I was going to put a link out, they won't be able to. Is that right?
They're only going to be for me. They might get some. You know, these guys come on and flog their books. They buy a book and they from somewhere else maybe, and they flog it on Amazon on the same site. They might be able to buy one of those. Because what it means is, even though there'll be far fewer of them, and if there are any sold, I'll get nothing at all out of it. Zilch. So they're trying to destroy me financially and destroy the books, destroy my image, destroy everything they possibly can. Bringing people on board who are basically con men from various parts of the world and trying to sell those ideas as being really viable options. They say absolutely nothing about the situation with Diana at all. And they try to kill my book, Stone Dead, because as Patrick Connell said to me, they're going to have a problem with my book. And that's just started blocking from there on 3.5 years ago.
And of course, it would deter anybody else who might be thinking about publishing or self-publishing. I mean, you didn't. Your book was published by a company. But anybody who might think, well, if a publisher won't do it, I'll self-publish, I suppose it sends a message out to people, you know, we can come after you and we can destroy you. You've even had people turn up, you know, at different times to intimidate you, haven't you? Strangers letting you know that they're around and...
Yes, I've had people walking down my drive, following me on the ferry to England and back again, apart from Patrick on the aircraft. I've had someone named Jenny, who used to work at the British Embassy in Moscow, MI6, come over and tell me, I'd say, you know, why was I doing this? Why was I so bothered about this? And then I said, well, what happens if I breach these barriers they've been flunking in my way? She just quite calmly said, well, I'll just kill you.
Just kill you, stone dead. Job done.
I mean, that's the pressure, and it's non-stop, incessant, constant pressure, because they just cannot allow this truth to come out amongst the people.
No, they can't.
They can't allow them.
It's one of the big barriers to people understanding the world they really live in, is the child abuse scandal, mm-hmm. and who these royals really are, their lineage, their bloodlines. I mean, Keith Allen talked about it, you talked about it, how important bloodlines are to these people. They marry amongst themselves, they marry within the banking families as well. All of this stuff that we used to think was crazy conspiracy theory when David, God love him, my mate and my colleague was writing about this stuff years ago, it's all coming to light now. We've had a lot of tweets on this, Alan. If you go on Twitter later on and go to my handle, Richie Allen Show on Twitter, you'll see there's been a lot of tweets, a lot of supportive tweets there coming in for you. There is the inevitable question about the parentage of Prince Harry and Major James Hewitt. Now, I know you've not written about this, but you must have looked into it. The resemblance is absolutely uncanny. The story has changed a couple of times about when Diana had an affair with this guy, this former army major and polo a participant. What do you know about her relationship with him and whether or not Harry is indeed his son?
I'm going to sound pretty grossy here. I mean, basically, I will lay into it. I'll reveal the truth when I find it. I will attack the royal family without any hesitation whatsoever, where it's justified. As far as this is concerned, to be honest with you, I do know the truth. But I think it's unfair to Harry to start throwing these things around. I mean, I support Harry and William. They're about the only two, I think, in the whole bunch that I do support. I wouldn't want to cause him any problem. It's honestly the bottom line. Sorry about that.
No, listen, I totally understand that, and I respect it, and I wasn't in any way attempting to be callous and cold-hearted about it, you know, but it's very interesting in terms of what they're going to inherit, who he is.
Yeah.
You did say, and I'm not going to give any clues whatsoever, but you did mention to me today somebody has come forward to speak to you and might very well soon go on the record. That person is in the know, that's all I'm going to say. And if they do that, it's going to throw another light on what you've been saying and add more proof and more merit to what you've been writing, Alan. So that's exciting.
I think it's fair to say that if it all comes together, and it isn't it at the moment, because I've got to get people, you know, you give evidence to certain people, and I've got them to prepare to listen to it, etc., and various other things. But if it does come through, it's going to be, I believe, from the bit I know, I don't know all of it myself, but I know most of it, it's going to be devastating. It'll probably be the curtain back. And so I think that needs to happen, in my view. If it does, then we have to resolve where we go from there. This business about what happens, the consequence to me, is an irrelevance. We are duty-bound to look after Diana, even in death. She looks after us and other people too. And when people say to me about, well, why are you doing this now? What's the point? Let the kids, the children enjoy their lives. That's a nonsense. It's like saying the police should, if they're in the cold cases where people have been murdered, The victim had children, and they should not bother investigating it for the sake of the children. Absolute nonsense. Of course the police have to investigate it where they're able to do so. But where they're prevented from investigating it by political diktats from various forces, various people.
How terrifying. Sorry, Alan, on that, and the boys and the children, how terrifying must it be for those two lads, knowing damn well who their grandfather is and what he represents? I mean, they must
absolutely
know.
Absolutely right.
You know? I mean, it's horrendous.
Horrendous, I agree entirely. And basically, they know what happened. And I know they know the mother was murdered. And they must have a fairly good inkling if they don't know much detail.
But God knows what they were exposed to in the time after her death. We don't know that either.
Absolutely right.
And we shouldn't speculate about it because we don't know. Listen, mate.
I mean, the reason I think that I'd like, what I need to do, in my view, my objective is to get the evidence to the two lads. If they've got it, all the evidence, all the facts in front of them, I don't believe certainly Harry will be able to tolerate it. And I'm not certain that William would either. The problem, of course, is that if William and Harry both back off and say, that's it, this is a mafia system. They've always known it's a mafia. This is a mafia system. Always has been a mafia system. That I don't want to be a godfather for this bunch. And they just back off. And that's the end of the monarchy. It's over.
Listen, mate, do us a favour. Stay in touch. Yeah? It's been a while, but we have our numbers now. You have mine and I have yours. So keep us posted on that and the developments with the witness. Is there any online resource, Alan? I know you work alone and it's difficult. Is there anywhere you want us to direct our listeners to? Or should they just look for the book?
No, thanks, Rich. Yeah, I think it'd be better, in fact, if they actually came. What I'm trying to do is like my book online on my website. And it's World Wide Web, Probity Press, P-R-O-B-I-T-Y, Probity Press, limited, .com.
Brilliant.
That's my website.
I'm going to tweet that out, probitypress.com. So I was on the website today, in fact. I'll tweet it out and put it on Facebook as well. We'll talk again soon. We won't leave it as long. Alan, the best of luck with everything, mate. Really great to get you back on again.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for phoning me. I'm very grateful to speak to you again. Fantastic. Any chance I get the truth to go out there, fantastic.
It was an honour, mate. Thanks, Alan. Look after yourself. Alan Power on the line to us there from the Isle of Man, the author of the exceptional book. And I am going to put links out to it, by the way. Well, links out to Probity Press. I'm going to do that. And that's where you should go to find out about getting the book. The book is The Princess Diana Conspiracy. I'll put a link out to Alan's website. Don't go anywhere else. Go there if you want to pick up a copy of the book. That's it for pretty much it for the first hour of the programme. Paul Craig Roberts has been in touch. He's standing by. Going to join me in the second area with the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and alternatecurrentradio.com. Don't forget, a little bit later on, at alternatecurrentradio.com, 2 a.m. London time. That's 2 a.m. London time, which I think is 9 p.m. Eastern time. The Boiler Room programme with Hesher and Spore. The Boiler Room, 2 a.m. London time on alternatecurrentradio.com. In the meantime, here's the Stereophonics and Dakota just for you. Alan Power's the real deal, by the way. More on him in the future, no doubt about that. We'll be right back. Take a look at me now. Stereophonics on the Richie Allen Show, Dakota. The time is 2 minutes past the hour. What's the North Korea orchestrated crisis all about? Well, Paul Craig Roberts will talk to us about that in a minute. This is serious stuff, this. It really is. Paul joins us, former Assistant Treasury Secretary, author, and his website, paulcraigroberts.org. Can't recommend it highly enough. Terrific articles. You know, Paul, I think one of the things we have in common, this is going to sound a bit bizarre. I'm not going to compare myself to Paul Craig Roberts, but I think what Paul's website, paulcraigroberts.org, does, and I think what this program does as well, it's good entry-level stuff. At times, it's good entry-level stuff for people on the fringes. You know, we keep mentioning these people. Who are these people? These mythical people, but they're not mythical. They're real. People disillusioned, pissed off, fed up, hurt, anxious, don't understand why. And what it is it's right in front of their faces that they're being lied to from the moment they get up out of bed to the moment they go to bed, 15 or 16 hours later, by their newspapers, by their television screens, by their phones. And it's important that we keep these people in mind when we talk about these issues, not assume knowledge. 3 minutes past the hour. Very quick break. When we come back, without further ado, I'll be joined by the one and only Paul Craig Roberts on your Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or a nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2. Available now at premillionpictures.co.uk.
Welcome back. 5 minutes past the hour. Couldn't be any better. Good form today, Wednesday, April 4th. It isn't, it's May. I did this again yesterday. How could I forget? May the 4th be with you and all of that for Star Wars fans. I was no fan of the recent Star Wars films. Star Wars 7, I thought was absolute garbage. And the spin-off Disney Star Wars film, I didn't like that either. Yeah, I can be curmudgeonly at times about these things, but yeah, I didn't like any of those at all. Let's welcome our next guest back to the programme. I'm an enormous fan of his. I think he's fantastic. Check out his website, paulcraigroberts.org. Daily articles, no spin articles, telling you about these big issues, telling you the truth and asking the questions not being asked by the mainstream media either. He's written several brilliant books as well, which we've mentioned. They can be found at paulcraigroberts.org. He is, of course, a former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. Let's welcome back to the programme our great friend and colleague, Mr. Paul Craig Roberts, who's had car trouble recently. How's the old car there, Paul? Is it back on the road?
I didn't have any car trouble. I just gave it a good workout on the racetrack.
Oh, did you? Oh, you were racing, were you?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I didn't realise you were an amateur car enthusiast in terms of racing and stuff like that. I'm very impressed. Welcome back, Paul. Thanks for coming back on, mate. I really appreciate that. There's so much stuff we can get into. I've been sharing your articles on our social media pages, of course, and I want to talk a little bit about at the outset about North Korea and what's really happening with that country, and some of the comments being made by your president recently, by his Secretary of State. Tell us about North Korea, Paul. A lot of people only get their information about North Korea from Amnesty International or from the BBC. They hear all these horror stories about the country, about the lunatic Kim Jong-un, and we hear stories about death camps and all of this stuff and nuclear weapons. What's really going on?
Well, Washington always demonizes countries, governments, political leaders that Washington regards as being in Washington's way. You know, there's a long tradition of this. It goes far back in time. And in the last couple of decades, we've seen it. You know, Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi, Assad, Iran, Putin. So what is happening with North Korea? Well, the United States could really care less about North Korea. And obviously, if North Korea was a threat to the United States would not in any sense be a superpower. It would be some insignificant country of no import. And Washington knows that. So what is this all about? It is another orchestrated crisis by Washington, the purpose of which is to serve as cover so Washington can put anti-ballistic missile bases on China's border. That's what this is about. They did it follows perfectly what we did with Iran. We orchestrated an Iranian crisis, and that became cover for putting anti-ballistic missile bases on Russia's border. And we told the Russians, oh, these aren't directed at you, they are directed at the Iranian nuclear ICBMs. Well, of course, Russia and everyone else knows that Iran has neither nuclear weapons nor intercontinental ballistic missiles. So that's what this is. This is another orchestrated crisis. And what Washington is doing, it's ringing the two countries that are large and strong enough to serve as constraints on Washington's unilateralism. It's ringing them with an anti-ballistic missile shield that tells them that they have lost a good part of their retaliatory power should they be hit by an American preemptive strike. If they tried to reply, little would get through the shield, and they would then be subject to a second devastating attack from the United States. So it's Washington's plan to put these two countries in a situation in which they have to bend to Washington's will and get out of Washington's way. That is, this is a removal, an attempt to remove the constraints on Washington's world unilateralism.
What reaction do we expect from the Chinese and the Russians, Paul? And I'm talking in the short to mid-term, because as you say in your article, which I'm going to put on Twitter again now, they're well aware of what's going on, the Chinese. They're not stupid. So what sort of reaction can we expect from them? How dangerous? We're back to talking about this again, you and I. How dangerous is this in terms of the response we might get?
It's very dangerous. You know, the American weapon systems are not as good as we pretend. And the reason is that the military security complex has such a can rely on such a massive budget, and it makes so many profits from cost overruns that it doesn't really focus on having effective weapons. In fact, it hasn't needed effective weapons for about 25 years since the collapse of the Soviet Union. And so they're kind of in the habit of just running up cost on things because that maximizes their profits, because they always get the cost overruns, and not on the effectiveness of the weapons. Whereas the Russians are very cost conscious and emphasize the effectiveness of their weapon systems. And many suspect the Russian weapons are superior. So what we see happening is that the Chinese and the Russians are building up their strategic capabilities so that we have a real three-way arms race underway. Perhaps the most dangerous part of this is the misinterpretation of false signals. You know, all during the Cold War, we've said this before, we've talked about this before, Richie, but all during the Cold War, both the United States and the Soviet Union received many false alarms. They would receive alarm incoming ICBMs. And yet no one ever pushed the button to respond. You don't have much respond time. It's limited to just very few minutes. And why didn't they? Because both sides during the entirety of this Cold War were working to diffuse the tensions. You know, Kennedy worked with Khrushchev to diffuse tensions. Nixon gave us SALT I. He gave us the anti-IBM treaty. You know, Carter gave us SALT II. Reagan is negotiating the end of the Cold War with Gorbachev. So when you have both sides working to diffuse tensions, there's little reason to believe the signals that there's an incoming attack. And so they tended to discount this, to disbelieve it, which was a good thing. But when you have the kinds of high tensions and rising tensions that Washington has created since the Clinton era, when they first began breaking all of the promises they had made to the Russians, Washington withdrew from the anti-IBM treaty, when Washington changed its war doctrine from nukes being a retaliatory weapon to a preemptive first strike weapon, to putting NATO on Russia's borders, to putting anti-ABM missile bases on Russia's border, to demonizing Russia, false accusations, demonizing the president of Russia. This has built tensions so high, and also with China, that false alarms are likely to be believed. And since false alarms are so prevalent, it's entirely possible the world will be blown up simply because somebody trusted a false alarm. And they trusted it because they've seen so many provocations from Washington. In fact, just last week, maybe it was this week, the Russian High Command announced that its conclusion is that Washington is preparing a preemptive nuclear strike on Russia. So if the high command believes that, and somebody says, here's the missiles coming in, they're going to say, oh, yes, that's what we expected. And boop, the button's pushed. The same for the Chinese. You know, it was a few years ago that Washington stupidly published how it would knock China out in a nuclear war. And the Chinese responded by showing how they would knock us out.
Yeah.
So when you have these kinds of tensions, you can't afford to have false alarms, and yet false alarms are simply part of the system.
We're approaching 17 minutes past the hour. Our friend Paul Craig Roberts is on the line. Go to paulcraigroberts.org. Paul is a former Assistant Treasury Secretary, worked under President Ronald Reagan. He's an absolute expert in matters geopolitical. We're talking about North Korea, China, the US, Russia. We had Senator Richard Black on the programme a short time ago, Paul. I think the inspiration came from you. I think David might have mentioned him, and then I read something on your website. Maybe one of your readers maybe mentioned him. And he absolutely endorses everything you've said to me on this programme about the methodology with which they're doing this, the motivation behind the neocons behind it. But we talked a bit about Israel. Just for our listeners' benefit, Senator Richard Black is a Virginia-based senator. And how heavy or how important is the Israeli influence in the decision-making process? And the what we're seeing at the moment roll out, how important is Israel to all of this?
Well, extremely important, because the most important of the neoconservatives are Zionists. They're Jews, but Zionist Jews. And some of them are dual Israeli-American citizens. And they have been in high positions of power now for a couple of decades, in the high positions of the Department of Defense, the Department of State, the National Security Council. And they are a clique. They hang together, and they basically are the most influential force in American foreign policy. Israel is a essentially controls American Middle Eastern policy. And Israel is using the United States to eliminate the countries that supply Hezbollah. Hezbollah is the militia in southern Lebanon. And why does Israel want to be rid of Hezbollah? Because Israel wants the water resources in southern Lebanon. There's a big river there. Israel needs the water for its development, and has twice sent the Israeli army into southern Lebanon, and twice the vaunted Israeli army has been chased out of Lebanon by Hezbollah. So if Israel can get the United States to get rid of Syria and Iran, which are the two main supporters of Hezbollah, then Hezbollah will not have the weapons, the financial support, and can be defeated, and Israel can annex southern Lebanon just as they have annexed Palestine. So this is very important to Israel, because the Zionists have this doctrine of greater Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates. This, according to the Zionists, was the original Israel, and the area that God gave them, and to which they have title. And so their long-term plan is to regain that territory. So if they can eliminate anyone in the way, such as Hezbollah, which they can eliminate by eliminating Assad and Iran, then they can get on with their big scheme.
Nobody criticizes them, not even here. I mean, you're well aware of the conservative friends of Israel, the Labour friends of Israel, the Liberal Democrat friends of Israel. Any criticism of them at all, Paul, even at the highest level of politics here, people are labelled racist and anti-Semitic. And we've had people on the programme recently from different political parties here, George Galloway. We've had other people on the programme, and they say that the takeover by the Israelis of government here in the UK is equal to that of the takeover of your country, which you described, which Cynthia McKinney has described on this programme before, friend of yours, supporter of yours. It's the thing that people don't want to talk about. And if it wasn't for paulcraigroberts.org and if it wasn't for other websites and certain programs, nobody would talk about it.
That's right. The Israelis managed to use World War II and the Holocaust, whether real or alleged, no one knows, because no one's allowed to investigate it. But they have succeeded in using this story, which may be true and which may not be true, to present themselves as the worst victims of all time. And they use that then to shame any criticism of Israel, because if you criticize Israel, then you may be setting them up for another Holocaust. And so this is, in fact, we have had leading Jewish intellectuals write books exposing the use of the Holocaust by Israel to make its immoral and illegal actions secure from criticism. So that is how it gets, that's how they do it. They have very powerful lobbies. In fact, AIPAC is considered to be the most powerful lobby in the United States. They have the Anti-Defamation League. And if you as much as just make a mild criticism of some Israeli policy, you are labeled an anti-Semite, and they put you on a list of anti-Semites, and they try to discourage anyone from paying attention to you because you are a Nazi. And so this does shut people up. The Israel lobby in the United States is so powerful that it has never failed to remove its critics from the House of Representatives and from the Senate. Everyone who has ever stood up to Israel, every senator, every member of the House, including Cynthia McKinney, have been defeated in the next election. They have powerful financial power. There's plenty of money with which to buy people, to buy journalists, to buy publishers. They're very prominent in entertainment, and so they can influence how people think through the movies. It's an amazing amount of power for such a small number of people.
I'm not trying to get you into trouble. I couldn't do anyway. I've always admired, despite the very, very, very high altitude you operated in politically, you've always said whatever it is you feel. I'm going to throw a really controversial question in there. It isn't loaded. Do you think that, I mean, look, first of all, let me just get it on the table straight away. The Nazis were maniacal murderers, and they killed a lot of people. They definitely targeted Jewish people in Germany and elsewhere. There's no doubt about that. Absolutely no doubt about it. Do you think, though, that there's, that we'll ever discuss numbers? I put this question to Norman Finkelstein years ago. I used to speak to Norman all the time. Is there any sense, Paul, that they might have exaggerated the devastation in Germany in the 1940s? Because we keep talking about how it's been exploited. Norman wrote that magnificent book. This is in no way to deny the Holocaust or to deny the suffering of Jewish people. Not at all. But were the numbers, do you think, exaggerated, or is that taboo as a question?
Well, I don't know. I've never studied it.
Me neither.
I don't know. I've seen it challenged by various people, including historians, but I've never gone into it. And I notice that the historians who challenge it, there was a British historian, I forget his name, and he happened to be in Germany or somewhere when he challenged it. He had challenged it in a scholarly paper, in a scholarly journal or something, and was arrested in Germany and sentenced to prison. So What bothers me about it is, normally, if you are content with your story, like if the Holocaust is real and it's been given complete validation, then you wouldn't study. That just validates it again and validates it again. And if it's true, there's no reason not to study it. But if you can't study it, it always raises suspicion. It's like 9/11. We never had an investigation. We had a political committee sit down and write down what the government told it, but no one investigated anything. The government service that was supposed to do the physical investigation, they did it with computer simulations.
Yeah.
So there's no one has ever investigated 9/11. So why? If the government is confident of its story, you would have expected the investigation to uphold the story. So why prevent the investigation? You know, we have now these 3,000 architects and engineers trying to get a real investigation. They can't get anywhere, or hardly anywhere. They've gotten somewhere, but not very far. So that's what's suspicious to me about it. But as I say, I don't know. I've never been that interested to go study it. It's part of the past. I think Finkelstein is absolutely correct that it is a powerful weapon in the hands of the Israeli state. And they use the Holocaust story to shield themselves from criticism of their own awful crimes. I mean, just look what they've done to Palestine.
That's a brilliant and totally fair way of putting it. It's exactly my sentiment, Paul. I totally agree with you. You know, we know that Jews were persecuted. We know that. I'm like you. I'm more interested in the exploitation of the memory of people who died at Treblinka, at Sobibor, at Dachau. The exploitation and the sullying of their memories by Zionists who would use what happened to those people to shut up people who want to criticise Israel doing the same thing. I think it's a brilliant and very fair way of putting it. Can I ask you about Mahmoud Abbas's visit to DC and Trump's bizarre statements about the peace process? What have you made of that, Paul?
Well, I don't know anything about it. I haven't followed it. There's no peace process.
No.
And in fact, there's nothing left of Palestine, is there? I mean, the Gaza Strip is all that's left, and it's essentially a concentration camp. Israel controls all entry and exit. They prevent vessels from delivering supplies through the cities. They control how much supplies go in over land. And periodically, they just go and bomb the place. So the rest of Palestine, if you look at these maps of what used to be Palestine, you know, there are these maps that they'll show you like what it was in the 40s and the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and what it's like now. And you see this amazing shrinkage. If you look at the map now, Palestine is a few little dots, green dots. You know, the great big hunk of green that was Palestine is now reduced to a few little green dots. And Israelis that I know who are in opposition to the settlements of Palestinian land, I've had some of them as house guests. They simply say that it's been eaten alive. The Palestinians, the villages that remain are cut off from one another. And the Palestinians are cut off from the schools. They're cut off from the hospitals. To get to a hospital, they have to get through a checkpoint. And sometimes the Israelis will let them right through. Sometimes they'll let them wait to go through until they're dead. Kids can't get to and from school. They're cut off from water. Many of the villages now cut off from their own fields. They're cut off from their orchards. Their fences and control points throughout the remnants of the West Bank Palestine. And the people essentially, in fact, they're refugee camps that I think go back 60 years, in which there are people who are born and die, and the Palestinians who were born and they die in these refugee camps in Lebanon, in Jordan. That's the story I get from the Israelis that I know who are opposed to this. You know, not all Israelis go along with these policies, though I think more and more do, because the government is raising the costs of opposition. So a lot of Jews now can end up being treated like a Palestinian because, oh, you're opposed to the government, you're on the side of the terrorists and blah, blah. And I think I read recently that one of the Palestinians who was active in trying to prevent the seizure of Palestinian homes and villages was arrested. He was a prominent person as well. So it's a awful type of situation about which the world is silent.
The world is silent. Paul Craig Roberts.
About the real crimes, and we make up all these crimes about Gaddafi and Assad and Russia.
While heinous crimes are committed in Gaza and in Saudi Arabia. What an inverted world it is, Paul, when the Saudi Arabians get co-opted on the UN Commission for Women. This is the sort of stuff you could imagine Peter Sellers and, you know, some of the great American comedians years ago writing about. You know, we laugh because we have to, because if you don't laugh, you go insane. It's a crazy, crazy world. In the 10 minutes we have left, and thanks for staying with me, it's paulcraigroberts.org. Folks, bookmark Paul's website. It's very easy to do that. And when you bookmark his website, and articles are posted there daily, at least every 2 days, seriously well-written and well-thought-out articles on these issues. Paul, we have an election on the 8th of June, as you know. It's being called a second referendum on Brexit. I think in the near future, I'll ask you back on to talk about that. But one of the things we have learned about it is, if Theresa May secures a majority and a significantly improved majority after the election, her government is going to look to bomb Syria as soon as there is another story about a chemical weapon attack. And today, as you and I speak today, the BBC reports that another Western intelligence agency is reporting that Bashar al-Assad has pulled the wool over our eyes and has continued to develop and make chemical weapons since 2013, when he signed a deal to eliminate them. Now, I don't believe that. What I do believe is we might be looking at an imminent serious bombing campaign being launched against Syria, maybe with a ground invasion to follow. Now, I know we spoke about this before, and you said you believe that the Russian presence is still significant there and might prevent that. And I also want to talk briefly about the Russian Turkish-Iranian deal to set up safe zones inside the country. How are you reading this situation?
Well, Vladimir Putin has already said that he expects there'll be a number of false flag chemical attacks set off by Washington, used as a justification for military attacks on Syria. And he says he expects these attacks to also be useful to Washington on the grounds that, look, the Russians are defending the Syrians who are using chemical weapons. So it becomes a way of demonizing Russia and Syria. So he says that he expects that this is going to happen. So I think he controls the airspace over Syria if he wants to. And I suspect what he's trying to do is avoid conflict. And therefore, he's working out these safe zones and with Iran and Turkey, and the fact that Turkey, a NATO member, is cooperating with Russia on this is, I think, meaningful. I assume Putin knows that he may or may not be able to rely on the Turkish guy, that he may not be very steadfast, that he could even be playing some kind of false role. But I think there's some real meaning to this. I think Turkey's rethinking the situation of its relationship to the West via Russia. So if they can succeed in these safe zones, then American attacks, and I don't think, you know, Britain might be part of it as some kind of cover for the United States, but there will be mainly U.S. attacks. If they take place, then it's more onus on the United States. They violated safe zones, they've done this, they've done that, and this then justifies the Russians controlling airspace or turning over to Syria the updated Russian air defenses, which will make it impossible for the United States or Britain or Israel or anybody to fly over Syria. So you may get conflict out of this if the Americans push too hard. I've always been worried that the Russian restraint is a bit too much, because Washington then sees it as a lack of resolution, a lack of confidence in the part of the Russians, and then pushes further. Whereas I think if the Russians were a little more forceful about it and simply announced that, okay, you come in here, you know your planes are not going back, and neither are your troops, that would block these types of things, because the United States is not really prepared to take on Russia in that way. And therefore, it would stop it. But of course, if you look at it through Putin's eyes, then he can be portrayed in Europe as this great aggressor, this menacing force. And he has to avoid that role if he is going to keep his hopes that at some point, at least some of the European governments will realize that they don't have any stake in conflict with Russia, that their pawns, that they bear the risk, not the Americans, and that they're not going to participate in this, and somebody start pulling out of NATO. That's what we have to hope for in order to avoid an eventual conflict. There has to be some realization on the part of the Europeans themselves, the British, that they are pawns, that they're being forced into a conflict in which all life in Europe, the UK, will simply disappear, because the American ABM shield doesn't protect against Russian cruise missiles or the Russian Air Force. And if Europe is forced into a conflict by the United States with Russia, Europe will cease to exist, even if nothing happens to the United States. So at some point, I think Putin hopes that this realization will percolate up through all the bought and paid for corrupt European leaders, and they all are, and say, hey, you know, we like the American money, we're scared of them and all the rest, but this is too big a threat, we won't participate in this. So I think that's why Putin can't be as forceful, and therefore that makes the risk of American intervention in Syria greater.
Paul, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks so much for doing it. I really appreciate your time. You have no idea how much I mean that. Folks, go to paulcraigroberts.org, bookmark the website, check out Paul's excellent articles. He's giving you a perspective on these issues you're not getting when you go on to BBC, CNN or C-SPAN. Paul, thanks so much, my friend. Stay safe behind the wheel and look after yourself. We'll talk again real soon.
Look forward to it, Rich.
Cheers, Paul. What a great guy Paul Craig Roberts is. Check out paulcraigroberts.org for more on these issues. I really appreciate his time. As always, 22 minutes, it's not, it's 18 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. I am going to pause for some music to catch a breath there. We covered a lot there. We covered a lot. Really interesting perspective on how the Holocaust is used by Israel to justify, defend, and exempt itself from criticism. Extraordinary that. I didn't think you'd go down that road, but really great to get that perspective from Paul. This is Snow Patrol, by the way, on your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and Alternate Current Radio. Friend Jean-Anne Crowley in Dublin, the actress extraordinaire. Really, really terrific actress and marvellous human being. I think she's lost her marbles. Like the character from Peter Pan. Is it the butler, is it? The nanny. Who lost these marbles? I think she's lost her marbles. Why am I hearing music now, she said to me on Messenger there. Because I'm playing music, was my reply. That was Snow Patrol and Chocolate, or chocolate, as French people say chocolate. French people who speak English say chocolate. They pronounce everything. Break words down and speak them and use them in ways that you didn't think were possible. When French people speak English, chocolate. Chocolate. It is exactly 14 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. You heard Paul Craig Roberts there on the Richie Allen Show talking about North Korea, about Syria, about Israel, the part that the Israeli government, the Zionists, play in what's unfolding in front of us. Fascinating subject. The area where most won't go. You know, I could tell you a little bit about producing this programme. The amount of times that we come across, or I come across, a journalist who is Jewish. And he or she is writing some good articles, thought-provoking articles, about Israel. And articles that are critical of Israel and the Israeli government. And we, or I, invite them on. And then they come back And they either politely say, no thank you, not for me, or they say, I don't want to be associated with you because you interviewed this person and that person and I believe that you're racist. Happens all the time. It makes me laugh. Actually, it certainly doesn't offend us. And the challenge goes out there, you know, thereafter from me. Well, explain to me which particular program you heard or which particular Sunday View you heard where you heard anything remotely racist or any opinion expressed about Jewish people that you could identify as being racist. And they never come back to you. They never come back. I think what it is when we talk about the exploitation of the Holocaust, when we talk about the numbers and 6 million, and, you know, I always ask my guests, what do you think of that number? Could that number have been exaggerated? Do we need to have a look at that again? Not to in any way, you know, not to in any way insult the memory of people who died in concentration camps or people who died in ghettos. Not at all. But we know through the work of people like Finkelstein and others, that the memory of Jewish people who died in Germany and in Poland and everywhere else at the hands of the SS and all the rest of it, the memory has been exploited by Zionists who are murdering, torturing psychopaths who, as Paul described perfectly, imprison a group of people, a minority, in an open-air concentration camp in Gaza. These are areas I want to explore. And of course, what Zionism is, which has got nothing to do with Judaism, people don't want to talk about that either. When you mention that, only you talk about Zion, Rothschilds and all conspiracies. I get emails from people, I'm not coming on your program, you talk about the Rothschilds and all these conspiracies. It isn't a conspiracy. Get off your lazy arse. Find out a bit about the Rothschild family. You know, how important they are to all of this, to the royal families of Europe. Touched on this with Alan Power in the first hour, if you missed Alan. So, I'm going to take a very quick break. Back with more in a minute. This is Thursday's Richie Allen Show.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2, available now at premillionpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Now, the Worldwide Wake Up Tour is not finished. It's just on a break for the summer. It's back on the road in the autumn. It's going to be in North America, Canada. Go to theworldwidewakeup.com for tickets and details. Go and see David Icke. It'll be an extraordinary experience for you. I can't recommend it highly enough. That's David Icke. Want to mention again, at 2 a.m. UK time, the Boiler Room programme will be on air, Hesh and Spore. That's 2 a.m. on alternatecurrentradio.com. And we're proud also to be associated with Fab Radio in Manchester. We are Fab Radio 2. We are Fab Radio 2. We're the only show in town on Fab Radio 2. Go to Fab Radio international.com. But check out the array of other terrific alternative music programs, comedy programs, TV and film review programs, and much more besides on fabradiointernational.com. Verifiably, the world's most successful online internet radio station. Fantastic stuff there. 8.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Let me get the old diary out. I've been putting some guests in for next week. I'm looking forward to Nicholas Wilson. He's coming back on the programme. Mr. Ethical will be on the programme on Monday. Richard Kahlberg will be on the programme next Wednesday. Ralph Epperson returns to the programme. Excuse me. Ralph Epperson returns to the programme on Monday. Got some really good guests coming up next week. I'll be on air tomorrow afternoon, in the early afternoon, I think, with a week with a roundup of the week's news. Doing that in lieu of the fact is that I wasn't on air on Tuesday. So doing that in lieu of the fact Tuesday's programme didn't air. So I'll be with you tomorrow. Sunday View as usual at 11 a.m. And next Thursday, this is for the time being the last live radio show on Thursdays. This is moving to television next Thursday. BVTV, I'll be on air next Thursday at 9 p.m. UK time. In association with DavidIke.com, the Richie Allen television programme returns. It's going to be an hour with a news roundup and an in-depth interview with somebody important who's got something important to say from an independent media point of view on Thursday. So all of that's happening as well. I think if you go to LiveLeak.com, that's LiveLeak.com tonight, I think at 10 o'clock, is it? I think it's 10 o'clock. I think the Live Leak show will be on air tonight at 10 o'clock. Go to liveleak.com. That's with Hayden Hewitt. There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on with the Richie Allen show. There really is. I just want to give a shout out again to donations. The programme is no longer receiving any significant money through the Google monetization of it, the YouTube monetization. That's been done away with. You know this, effectively. It's been completely destroyed. It's caused huge problems for us. It will cause problems in the future if our listeners don't subscribe and make a monthly donation. Gotta say that, folks. Only if you can afford it, go to paypal.me/Richie Allen, paypal.me/Richie Allen, or if you go to richieallen.co.uk, halfway down the page there are bank details. At richieallen.co.uk there are bank details. If you want to set up a bank transfer and you don't want to use PayPal, you can do that there. Got to say that because it really is important, okay? Big shout out to why is my mind gone blank? It hasn't gone blank. To Chris from dataclinic.co.uk. Terrific guy who helps out with this program. Go to dataclinic.co.uk if you've got a problem with your electronic device, mobile phone, tablet, computer. Go to dataclinic.co.uk. And I want to say a big hi to Andy at Freestyle Homes as well. Check out Andy at freestylehomes.co.uk. Huge supporter of the independent media and a big help to us here at the Richie Allen Show. That's more or less it then for the programme. Remember, stay in touch with the Facebook page for the programme. That's facebook.com/The Richie Allen Show. Early tomorrow, I'll let you know what time I'll be on air, because I'm going to record the news programme tomorrow, but I'm going to do it live as well. So if you are around and you want to tune in live and participate, you can do that. It'll probably be around the 2 p.m. UK time mark tomorrow. I'm guessing that's when I will do that tomorrow afternoon. Alrighty. So that's it then. Pretty much that's it. I don't think there's anything else to do except to thank Simon Stewart for the outstanding work Simon does getting these interviews on our YouTube channel. Thanks to Simon for that, and to Aaron Callan for looking after richieallen.co.uk as well. Stay in touch with Alternate Current Radio for more terrific programmes with a different perspective on geopolitical events, Fab Radio 2, and of course davidike.com/headlines. Going to leave you with The Boss. This is Secret Garden. From the amazing Bruce Springsteen signing off, I've been Richie Allen. The programme produced, edited and introduced by me. Thanks for listening. Look after yourselves and one another. Until tomorrow, Friday, unusually. It's bye for now. Bye now. Look after yourselves.
Stay a million miles away.